1 Samuel chapter 27, if you're visiting here with us, my name is Paul Edlin, one of the pastors here, and it is a pleasure to be here with you this morning. We're actually going to read the whole chapter. It's not a very short one, 12 verses. Destiny is determined by what happens in you, not by what happens to you. Hold that thought. And David said in his heart, I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul. There is nothing better for me than that I should speedily escape into the land of the Philistines, and sure Saul shall disappear, despair of me, to seek me any more in any coast of Israel, so shall I escape out of his hand. And David arose, and he passed over with the 600 men that were with him unto Achish, the son of Maok, king of Gath. And David dwelt in Achish at Gath, he and his men, every man with his household, even David with his two wives, Ahinoam and the Jezreelitess, and Abigail, the Carmelitess, Nabal's wife. By the way, the 600 men plus their wives and their families and everything else. So it was a whole bunch of people. And it was told Saul that David was fled to Gath, and he sought no more again for him. And David said unto Achish, if I have now found grace in your eyes, let them give me a place in some town in the country that I may dwell there. For why should your servant dwell in the royal city with you? Then Achish gave him Ziklag that day. Wherefore Ziklag remains unto the kings of Judah unto this day. And the time that David dwelt in the country of the Philistines was a full year and 4 months. And David and his men went up and invaded the Geshurites. Here's all the rights here, folks. And the Gizrites and the Amalekites. For those nations were of old the inhabitants of the land, as they were in Shur, even unto the land of Egypt. And David smote the land. I'm reading from the New King James Version here, by the way, this morning. So I'm playing around with some of the words. But there's a reason why I'm using the New King James Version. I usually use the NIV, but there's a reason for it. And David smote the land and left neither man nor woman alive, and took away the sheep and the oxen and the asses and the camels and the apparel, and returned and came to Achish. And Achish said, whither have you made a road today? And David said, against the south of Judah, and against the south of the Jerahmeelites, and against the south and the Kenites. And David saved neither man nor woman alive to bring tidings to Gath, saying, lest they should tell on us, saying, so did David, and so will his manner be all the while he dwelt in the country of the Philistines. And Achish believed David, saying, he has made his people Israel utterly to abhor him, therefore he shall be my servant forever. Hold that thought. He, David, would be the Philistine king's servant forever. Destiny is determined, church, by what happens in you, not by what happens to you. Have you ever found yourself in a place or a circumstance or even a geographical place when in a moment of reflection you've asked yourself, why am I here? And suddenly you've realized that you're not where you should be. Actually, you're not where you want to be, but there you are. I was having coffee with someone recently, and they shared that how they'd become a Christian earlier on in their life, and stuff happened in life, and they shared also that because of circumstances, they had kind of walked away from their faith. It's not that they didn't believe in God so much, but it was a different lifestyle that they chose, and they got quite involved in the party scene and the nightclub scene, big time. And they were sharing with me that one particular night at a nightclub, They were just kind of standing there on their own and observing what was going on around them. And a thought came into their spirit, just left field, completely left field. And the question and the thought was, what am I doing here? That's what came into their spirit. What on earth am I doing here in this place? And they shared a little bit later on that they took that as a word from God, that God was speaking to them and saying, you're actually in the wrong place. This is not who you are. And as a result of that conversation between them and the Holy Spirit, they walked away. They actually walked out that night and never looked back. It's a true story. And it's got a wonderful ending as well. And essentially, that's what's happened here with David, as the whole of chapter 27 records a decision that he made to leave his homeland, to leave his family, his support structures, his friends, everything that he knew, everything that was him, to leave all of that and go and live amongst the Philistines, the sworn enemy of his people. You know, at one level, you can understand the why, and I will explain that soon. But given God's demonstrated call over David's life as a young boy, for David to choose to go and live in the enemy's territory was a stunning decision. Given the fact that the enemy's territory, for the purposes of this message, is a metaphor for the world, for out there, outside of God's providence, outside of God's kingdom rule here on earth, outside of God's guidelines and his word. Outside of that is living in the Philistine camp in the world. It was a stunning decision, and a decision that was completely at odds with God's destiny for his life. Yet here he was, now living in Philistine territory, in the enemy's camp. Fortunately, David realized his mistake, and because of God's grace, he chose to return back to his homeland, chose to go back to his people, back to his roots, and God's earlier call upon his life was then finally realized. So to understand the why and the how, this is a very brief overview of David's life up to leading up to this event. Here's chapter 1 through to chapter 26, very briefly. Picture David. He's a shepherd boy. They think he was around about somewhere between 12 and 15 years of age when he's out there looking after dad's sheep on the side of the mountain. He's alone in the fields. On two separate occasions, a lion comes along, and then a bear comes along to kill the sheep that he's looking after. But through God's divine enabling, David lays hold of them and kills them both, separate occasions. Sometime later, he's told that he's going to be the next king of Israel, and he is publicly anointed for that role. In fact, he's standing there in front of his father and all his household and all of his brothers. And Samuel comes along and says, he's the one. He's going to be king of Israel. And we're not sure exactly what age he was then, but it was probably just after this event, maybe 15 years of age, something like that. And shortly after that, David finds himself in the royal palace serving the king. One day, David's father, Jesse, asks him to take some food for his brothers who are engaged in a conflict with their arch enemy, the Philistines. When David arrives at the fight, the army and Saul, who's their leader and their king, they're comatose with fear. They're hiding in their tents, you know, because there's this huge man out there built like a tank called Goliath, who has been taunting them up to 40 days, send someone out to fight me, and if you can beat me, we will leave your land, you've won the fight. Well, they're all hiding, including the king. Then David, at age 22 or thereabouts, he's standing there listening to this. The whole army is there where he is standing. The king is there. And David said, I'm not putting up with this. And there was an indignation that built up in his spirit, an indignation that God had placed in him because of the call upon his life. And David said, I'm not having that. I will take this guy on And King Saul says, here, you'll need my armor. And he put the armor on, and it was too big for him and too jolly heavy anyway. So he got rid of the armor, and you know the story. He walked out there, and he confronted Goliath, and he kills him with a sling and a stone. Well, actually, stone killed him. That came out of the sling. The enemy suddenly panics and flees, and all because David trusted in the power of his God. Next thing, he's promoted and he becomes the leader over the army. He marries the king's daughter. That would have been fun. He's now right at the top. Marries the king's daughter. And he becomes best friends with the king's son, Jonathan. Every event in David's life was bringing him ever closer to the day when he would be king. And then things take a turn for the worst for David. The king becomes jealous of David's growing reputation. David falls out of favor, and Saul tries to kill David several times, in fact. David's relationship with his wife breaks down. He can no longer fellowship with his best friend. He's fired from his leadership position in the army. The next thing you know, David is a fugitive. He's running for his very life. He's now hiding in caves and valleys and deserts. But all the time, trusting in God who kept him safe from the lion, kept him safe from the bear, and from Goliath. He's still trusting in God. David even has the opportunity to kill the king himself, two times, in fact. But because of his trust in God alone, believing that it is God's job to vindicate him, he spares the life of the man who is determined not to spare his life. Then one day it all gets too much. For the first time, David feels alone. He feels isolated. The significant men in his life, like Samuel and Jonathan, they're not there any longer to guide and support him. In addition, it looks like David's enemies will prevail. Even worse, it looks like God may have forgotten about him too. David becomes discouraged. He becomes disillusioned. Feelings of despair and depression begin to set in. In that space, he makes the decision to move and live with the enemy. He reasons that in doing so, the pursuit will be over, the pressure will be lifted, the enemy will withdraw, and he will at last experience some peace. Have you ever been there? I have. You know, this is not David's best decision, but it's the decision he made anyway. Well, that, folks, is a brief overview of David's life up to this point, 26 chapters. In the previous 26 chapters, we see David as devoted. We see David as faithful. We see David as secure and confident in God. But now, as if in the blink of an eye, just like that, a dramatic change takes place in David. In fact, the change takes place in David's heart. I want you to hold that thought. The change takes place in David's heart. And within the confines of his internal world, he will make a decision that will lead him into enemy territory where lying, deception, and even killing become the order of the day. Wow, verses 8 to 11. And it raises the question, what could cause this courageous, faithful, confident man who is called publicly by God to become king of a nation, what would cause him to make such a choice? Here's my first point. Because what your heart believes will ultimately determine your destiny. Verse 1. And David said in his heart. 16 months living with the Philistines, which is, like I said, it's a type and a metaphor for the world outside of God's providence, outside of God's provision, outside of God's will and way, living outside of that. Contrary to the call of God on his life, the 16-month detour all began with a decision that David made in his heart. In his heart. Not his head. In his heart. He may have never said it out loud. He may have never said it to anyone else. He may never even have said it to God. But he did say it in his heart. I want to pause. You know, folks, what goes on in your heart, what's going on in your heart right now has tremendous power to shape your entire future, in fact, to shape your life. The conversations that we have in our heart, they shape our thinking. And here's the truth, folks. What we think determines what we do. The great philosopher René Descartes made famous these words. I'm sure some of you can remember them. I think, therefore I am. Verse 1, but David said in his heart. So why is this important? Well, in biblical thought, the Bible calls your heart the wellspring of life. It is the seat or the source of your emotions. Everything you do issues from your heart. When I fell in love with my wife, I didn't fall in love with her from my head. I fell in love with her with all my heart. And there's a world of difference. It was my head that liked what I saw, but it was my heart she captured. My heart. And what I find sobering about these words, but David said in his heart. Ever since David was a boy, he had experienced God's divine providence over his life, God's safety over his life, his protection over his life in the face of impossible odds. Here's a lad, 12 years old, just a boy. And the lion and the bear come, and by the way, that wasn't a spiritual lion or a spiritual bear. They were the real deal. And David confronts it, and he says, you're not having dad's sheep. And he takes the lion and the bear on, and he kills them both. And actually, he kills them with a slingshot and his bare hands. Now, that doesn't happen unless you have divine inspiration, I would suggest. It just simply doesn't happen. A few years later, he fronts up to Goliath, the man mountain, and kills him with a single stone. Those three experiences alone, I would imagine, would give you confidence to face any opposition. Would that be true? That would fill me with confidence? Absolutely it would. So what's changed? What's changed for David? Firstly, I'll tell you what hasn't changed. What hasn't changed is God's divine destiny for his life. This is the biblical principle. God does not change his mind about your future, about your destiny. If we choose to walk away from it, and even if we choose to walk away from him, what God has said over your life stands. If he has said it, it stands. You can choose to reject it. You can choose to walk away from him. But he has not changed his mind about your future and your destiny. God's plan for David to become Israel's king was still in effect, even though he chose to go and live in enemy territory. In fact, all of David's experience, both negative and positive, were preparing him for that moment in time, that ultimate destiny. Up to this point, David's faith, David's trust in God had been unwavering. But now we see David, and let me read the words to you. This is David speaking. "One of these days, I shall be destroyed by the hand of Saul. The best thing I can do is to escape to the land of the Philistines." It wasn't David asking God, "God," like he had done before, "what should I do? What am I going to do here, God? You saved me from the lion and the bear and from Goliath and every other thing, and Saul trying to kill me. You've done all of that. What am I now going to do in this particular set of circumstances?" He didn't say any of that. He said, "The best thing that I can do." After all of God's faithfulness, why would he choose to deal with the situation his way and not God's way? That's a good question, eh? I want you to ask yourself that about your own life. Well, the answer is pretty simple. After a sustained period of being constantly chased, constantly harassed, hunted, I believe that David was, was physically and emotionally worn down. Can anyone relate to that? I mean, last night while I was watching the game. Yeah. Yeah, suck it up. Yes, right. "Don't worry, Dave, I'll have my day." I believe he was absolutely worn down emotionally and physically. You know, when we experience that kind of sustained pressure, we become vulnerable. Feelings of discouragement, despair, disappointment, and even depression flood into your spirit. And it seems to me that that's what happened to David here. Listen to the language that David used in the Psalms after this event, after those events that he wrote during this period. This is the Psalms. David wrote these. Psalms 10:1. "Why, O Lord, do you stand far off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble?" Psalms 13:1. "How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me?" This is David talking to God in this place of despair and just depressed, and what am I going to do? Psalms 22:1, my God, remember these? Who said these? "Why have you forsaken me?" That's the Psalm of David. "How long will you hide your face from me?" Why are you so far from saving me? So far from my cries of anguish. As preacher and author Alan Redpath says, the language of David at this point in his life is in the minor key of depression and sadness. Now, please hear me on this. This message this morning is not a critique of depression. That's not what I'm doing. There are very smart people that would be able to do that. But I will say this, and I really want you to hear this in your spirit. It is never wrong to become depressed. It's not helpful, but it is not wrong. It's not wrong, neither is it a sign of weakness. I've experienced depression. Took some time to work through it and to navigate my way out of it. Took about 3 years. Did you know that? Well, you do now. That's private information. Don't share it with anyone. Yeah. Oh, Chris will tell you. Went through a very difficult time. And with some good support, I had a Samuel around my life. Depression is not a disease, nor is it a sin to suffer from depression. I've heard that said. There must be some sin in your life, Paul. Well, okay, welcome to your world. What we know, though, is this. Depression is simply a symptom of something deeper in a person's life. You know, the Mayo Clinic says this about depression. Depression is a mood disorder that causes a persistent feeling of sadness and loss of interest. It affects how you feel, think, and behave, and can lead to a variety of emotional and physical problems. The real issue is not the depression so much. The real issue is, what will you do if and when you experience that? What will you do with that? Because many do experience it. Which brings me back to David and his response. This was his solution to this difficult period in his life. This was his response. You know, would you agree that if ever David needed God's divine enablement, it would be right now? Right in this period of time? When he's at his lowest point? Well, watch what David does. David didn't inquire of God, as he had done when he faced the lion, the bear, and Goliath. The text makes no mention of David crying out to God at all. He had before, many, many times. But chapter 27, it's kind of like this chapter's kind of planted in the middle as a demarcation line where David goes silent on God. What's going on here? In fact, there is an absence of overt reference to God's direction or guidance in the whole of chapter 27. And what we see David doing in verses 1 through to 4 is a sort of self-conversation. And we read these words, "But David said in his heart, 'The best thing I can do is run.' And flee David did. He ran away from his people, away from his support structures, away from his friends, away from the promises of God, right smack bang into the enemy's camp. And here's what often, if not always, happens when we make a decision to live in the enemy's territory. You eventually wind up adopting their values, and before you realize it, you're living just as they are. This once devoted, faithful, secure, confident, and upright man began lying and deceiving and killing innocent men and women, just as the Philistines were doing. All because of a decision that he had made in his heart. You know, when it comes to our heart, the Bible has an awful lot to say. Here's some scriptures. Proverbs 3:5, trust in the Lord with all of your heart and lean not on your own understanding. Notice it doesn't say trust in your heart. It says trust in the Lord with all of your heart. Trust in God with all of your heart. It doesn't even say that we are to rely on our own understanding, because it says don't lean on your own understanding. Proverbs 23:26, my son, give me your heart and let your eyes delight in my ways. Didn't say give me your mind. It says give me your heart. Why our heart is such an important issue, church? Because it affects the whole of your life. Jeremiah 17:9. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can understand it? It's not that your heart can never be good. It can. It's simply when your heart strays from following God's heart, it will change the way you think, and the way you think will govern the way that you act. As one commentator put it, the condition of your heart will ultimately determine the quality of your life. Luke 6:45, a good person produces good things from the treasury of a good heart, and an evil person produces evil things from the treasury of an evil heart. What you say flows from what's in your heart. The good news, though, church, is David later realized his mistake, and having come full circle, he cried out to God. And guess what words he cried out, because you'll know them. Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right or steadfast spirit in me. You see, he'd gone full circle. He said in his heart, I've got to get out of this situation. And we understand those feelings, those deep feelings of, I'm done. Have you been there? You know, that's it, God. I just can't handle this anymore. The pressure comes on and the enemy's circling around and everything that you touch seems to turn to lead rather than gold. And things are just not going well. And you get worn down and you lose your perspective, you lose your focus, and often we lose our focus on who God is. He's the one that's been there all the way along, even through the difficult times. He is still there. He said, I'll never leave you nor forsake you. But what can happen is we can switch our heart off from Him because of all the stuff that's going on. That is not the time to switch off from God. That's the time to press in more into who He is, getting into God's Word even more, praising Him even more, even when you don't feel like doing it. Because the first instance, praise is actually something you initiate in here before it comes out of here. We choose to praise God. There are times when I don't feel like praying to God at all. There are some times when I don't even feel like singing the songs. But I pray and I sing because I know that God is still there with me. I know that God is right there beside me, even in the midst of that difficulty. And at some point, there's a breakthrough. Has anyone been there? Yep, there's a few of us. Does that mean the rest of you are going to go there? Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit in me. David didn't ask for a pure body or a steady mind. He asked for a pure heart. And if you read on three more chapters and then get on to 2 Samuel, you'll see that after David returned back to his people, returned back to his friends, his support structures, his God, and God's call on David's life then becomes a reality. Because the God you serve is a redeeming God. He can take any situation that is turned to custard and turn it around completely and make something positive out of it. God is a redeeming God. There is nothing that He cannot do. There is nothing, no situation too big for Him that He cannot rectify. You've just got to stay true to your heart with God. Keep your heart pure. Keep it good. Do everything you can to keep it secure and protected. Proverbs 4:23. Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. Everything. Absolutely everything. What goes on in your heart affects your relationships. It affects your career, your ministry, your finances. Absolutely everything. Earlier in 1 Samuel 13, Samuel referred to David as a man after God's own heart. There it is again. And during that period of time in his life, 26 chapters, because he had this heart after God, every time he got into difficulty, and notice he got into difficulty. Because you've got a heart after God does not mean that you won't face challenges and difficulties. How many of you know that being a follower of Jesus can be hard work sometimes? Yeah, absolutely. Of course. And the Bible tells us that. But with God, there's always a way through. What's impossible for man is possible for Him. Earlier in David's life, while he remained steadfast, trusting in God, God never let him down. But in a moment of self-doubt, in a moment of sadness, depression, he chose to go live in enemy territory. What had changed? Well, God's destiny for David had not changed. That just it kind of just went on hold until David came to his senses. After it took him 16 months. And one day he must have said, this is stupid. This is silly. What am I doing here? Picks his family up, all of his people, 600 men and everyone else, and went back. And you read the rest of the story in 2 Samuel. It's extraordinary. You You know, every one of you here today has a God-given destiny over your life, whether you've realized it yet or still to realize it. Whether you've taken a detour at some point and it's kind of God hasn't taken it away, just kind of sits there on the shelf. And by the way, he didn't put it on the shelf, you did. Because you've chosen to take this path. Well, God's saying, come back. Because he's willing and waiting. He's got open arms, open hands, saying, I'm going to give this back to you. We all have a destiny over our life. But you know, here's a truth. Life can be difficult sometimes to our advantage and sometimes to our disadvantage. Hey. The final outcome all depends on what we allow that circumstance to do in our heart. Question for you then as we draw this to a close. Who speaks into your heart? Who do you allow to speak into your life? Who do you allow to tell you what to do and what you should or shouldn't do? Who do you allow to do that? Because I contend this morning, and David proves this, that in this life, it's not what happens to you that will determine your destiny. It's what you allow to happen in you. Because God can't do through you what he first hasn't been able to do in you. There's a lot of nodding heads. I'm going to take a little bit of extra time. Is that okay, church? I think God's doing something here, and I'm not going to miss the moment. Is that okay? Cool. You know, as we've seen in many times in David's life, before he would act, he would always inquire of God. But in this instance, he decided to make a major decision while his heart was hurting, while it was discouraged, dismayed, disappointed, and in depression. And in that vulnerable condition, he made a decision that was incredibly costly. Here's a Bible truth. No matter what the condition of your heart is right now, God loves you. Absolutely. More than you'll know. His plan is to give you a hope and a future. But we won't experience that destiny that he has planned if we choose to live our life in the enemy's camp, in enemy territory. It won't happen. Do you know why it won't happen? One simple biblical truth, one more truth. Because of free will. We get to choose. David got to choose. He got to choose to move into Philistine territory, and he got to choose to move out, back to where he should have been. He made both of those choices. So here's my question. How is it with your heart? How is it with your heart? Christine and I got a very good friend. In fact, she's preached here a couple of times. Do you remember Dr. Fiona Beals? Or Fee? Kathy Nessie, you'd remember her too. Fee said in one of her messages, I remember writing down the quote, life is hard, but being human is harder. We often look for the shortcuts, the way out of our times of struggle, which is exactly what David did. He said, God, I can't take this anymore. So he did, and he went in at the enemy's camp, you know, for a period of time. He found comfort. He found solace there. Yes, he felt good. He said to the king of Ziklag, you know, give me a city to go and live in and I'll just live over there and do my thing. So he was in favor with the guy, with the king. But here's the truth of that. What the enemy's camp promises you, before long, they'll never be able to keep the promise. Before long, it will turn to chaos because you're in the enemy's camp. You're not in God's camp. Before long, what it promised will never be realized. And David realized that he needed to go back to his call, back to his territory, back to his people, and back to his God. Bring the music team up, please, Jim. You know, you might be feeling just like David right now, maybe even believing that you've blown it and God is a million miles away. Well, as a matter of record, we see David in chapter 30. After the experience of this detour, we see David once more inquiring of God. And God met him immediately, right at that point. And if that's you today, he will meet you too. He absolutely will. He will not delay. Because your God-given destiny is not about what happens to you. It's what you allow God to do in you. That's how you find your destiny in him. It's allowing him to restore back all that's been lost. It's allowing him to mend the nets, so to speak, in your life. It's allowing him into those deep and dark places where you feel alone. Allowing him into that space where you're not alone because he's right there with you. It's allowing him to come in and fix what you cannot fix. If you do it God's way, you will not fail. If you do it God's way. And only if you do it God's way. It's 100% certainty success rate when we do it God's way. And that's what David, that was his learning from this experience, because it's not what happens to you. Our destiny is determined by what you allow God to do in you.